but it's always driven by some underlying emotion. And it's usually what we call a negative balanced emotion.
Are you crazy about Chihuahuas? Maybe you're wondering if a Chihuahua is the right dog for you. Perhaps you have a training or a behavior struggle. Well, look no further. Here you will find expert opinions, honest views, training and behavior advice, and much more on the Chihuahua Podcast. And now, allow me to welcome your hosts, Kate Masterton and Haley Miles. Over to you, ladies.
Welcome back to the Chihuahua Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Masterton, and I'm here with my co-host, Haley Miles.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello.
And in this episode, we are super excited to introduce you to a leading expert in canine aggression, Michael Shikashio. We have Shikashio on the Chihuahua Podcast, which is
I can't believe it. It's massive.
Michael
it is Shikashio huge.
On the Chihuahua Podcast.
Yeah. Little podcast, big guests.
Yes. Little podcast, big guests.
For our industry expert series, it is amazing. He's like a dream guest for us, and we hope that you enjoy his episode. Welcome to the Chihuahua Podcast, and we have a very, very, very special guest, one of our industry experts coming on today, and that is world-leading aggression expert Michael Shikashio. Hello.
Hello, hello. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on.
We're really honored to have Michael on today because he's, you know, one of our heroes and we really respect his work. So great to have you on the podcast. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourselves and your background, please?
Sure. So I've been training dogs for about 20 years or so. I got into it kind of fostering dogs and working with different rescues and didn't realize at the time I knew nothing about behavior or training, but to help the dogs more, I kind of wanted to learn more about behavior and training because I realized that many of the dogs that were getting surrendered to rescues or ending up in shelters were dogs with behavior issues, especially aggression or reactivity. And that's why I wanted to kind of say, all right, maybe I should probably learn a little bit more if I'm getting more of these foster dogs that have these issues, because that's what rescues do. They decide who's an experienced foster home and start sending you more and more difficult dogs. So that's how I caught the behavior bug and kind of transitioned to kind of a part-time dog training thing, taking all kinds of cases. And then that transitioned to a more full-time career, which then moved into my love of working with aggression cases, which I started to do exclusively about 12 years ago. And that slowly grew into teaching other trainers how to work with aggression cases. To now what I do is I run aggressivedog.com and kind of just have fun traveling around the world and teaching trainers and folks in the pet industry how to stay safe and work with aggression cases. So it's been a great journey for the last 20 years.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah. And you have a podcast as well, don't you? I've listened to for quite some time now. So it's great. I love listening to your podcast. So aggression, first question. How would you define aggression?
It's a good question because it's one that I get a lot, and I think I've adapted and changed it over the years. And the interesting thing is that, you know, when I was kind of trying to come up with an answer for that same question, I started to look around and look at different research, look at different academic texts, talk to different people, and everybody had a different answer. there's no universally like agreed upon definition for aggression. For me, I've kind of narrowed it down to, you know, it's behavior. So all animals are capable of aggressive behavior, and it's behavior used to increase distance or eliminate a threatening stimulus. So something an animal, human, dog, chihuahua, could be afraid of, feels threatened by, or is threatening their resources or something that is their need to survive, from an evolutionary standpoint too. It makes sense why animals display aggression. So that's really the function of the behavior. It's not a bad thing. You know, it's, of course, the word is a loaded term, you know, aggression or aggressive dog. And people think, you know, bad things when we hear that, or aggressive human. But really, it's just behavior, and it's very normal functional behavior that's, you know, without it, none of us would be here in terms of surviving as different species. So we need aggression or aggressive behaviors to survive. And I will quick note on the difference between predation or predatory behaviors and aggression. So with predation, sometimes we see a dog like chasing down like an animal and grabbing it and doing bad things. That also sometimes is labeled as aggression. And it certainly seems aggressive to the animal that's being chased or bitten, but that's different for me because the underlying motivation and emotions are different, as well as the function. The function there is to decrease distance. So it wouldn't make sense to be aggression because you can't do both increasing and increasing distance at the same time or wanting that outcome. So with predation, I'd label as that as predatory behaviors instead of aggressive behaviors. So a little subtle distinction there. But with Chihuahuas, don't see that as much as some of the other breeds, right?
No. Maybe chasing the old cat, possibly, but it's not really so a massive issue.
Yeah, I mean, I could dive a little further into that, too. That they call that the predatory motor sequence. Mm-hmm, so it's like this pattern of, you know, eye stalk chase all the way on up to grab and all the other bad things that could happen to another animal. And most of the time for a lot of dogs, we see that predatory motor sequence. However, it's not true predation. So like the Chihuahuas most of the time aren't trying to eat the cat for lunch or anything like that.
No.
It is just that what we're seeing is
it's just fun.
Yes.
Just fun.
So as an expert in aggression, do you see many cases with small dogs?
Yeah. So interesting thing about small dogs is that they tend to, you know, people don't take it as seriously. So if you have a Chihuahua or a small sized dog, you know, barking and lunging at somebody, it's not as scary for most people than if it was a Cane Corso or a large German Shepherd doing the same thing. So in my practice, I've seen probably less smaller dogs, but it's not to say I don't see them. I see plenty of small dog cases. But I think number one is the scare factor and the risk factor people are thinking about. So it's you know, small dogs, we see them, and certainly they have feelings too. They have needs too. And so we definitely want to not forget about the small dogs in our aggression cases.
But I'm really interested because usually I'm used to hearing you speak about aggression in larger dogs, so I'm just really interested to hear you talk about aggression in the tiny dogs, because like you said, but people don't take it the same seriousness as when it's in a small dog rather than a larger dog.
Yeah, and that's kind of sad too, because, you know, smaller dogs, when you think about it, are experiencing life with a different lens than larger dogs, because, you know, when you think about like the dog's point of view, like imagine if we just had a camera on a dog, small dog, and they're looking up at everything, that's much bigger, much scarier often than, let's say, a dog that's at, you know, 4 or 5 times height. That's the interesting thing about dogs, is that it's like the one species you get so many different sizes. And you know, if you think about any other species, you don't see such a broad range of breeds and sizes and behavioral traits. So yeah, so for small dogs, we forget that the world is a big place for them. And other creatures in the world are often very big, and other members of their own species are very big. Imagine if humans, like we had the day at the office, and we're walking around and we got like a 50 meter human walking next to us. That's what it could feel like for a small dog. And you know, we'd have to worry about getting stepped on. So
it's crazy, isn't it, how they just live in this gigantic world. It's amazing, really. I have in the past asked my clients and some of my group members in my Facebook groups to sort of empathize with their chihuahua and get down really low, like in a plank, and try and experience for at least a few minutes what it's like being that small.
It's
completely
different. And so, you know, when we see big feelings, you know, the emotional responses in small dogs, you know, and that's the sad thing again about the culture around small dogs is, you know, people laugh at it, but, you know, oftentimes you see that dog really expressing that, hey, get me out of here. I'm not feeling comfortable. I'm not feeling safe in this environment. And people are laughing and not paying attention to it because it's a small dog. And that's really sad when we think about the emotions of that animal.
Yeah.
Which leads nicely onto my next question. You actually might have covered a lot of that, actually. So Chihuahuas have a reputation, don't they, for being these aggressive little dogs, and actually in this country are labeled as having, well, in any countries, having small dog syndrome, a lot of them, you know, small dog syndrome, little man syndrome, Napoleon syndrome. And in this country, sometimes they're often referred to as rats on a lead or rats on a leash, poor things, and yappy, snappy ankle biters. So what do you think, and you've probably answered a little bit of this, but what do you think is the main cause of aggression in smaller dogs, specifically Chihuahuas?
I think, you know, it's similar to, you know, with all dogs, the number one reason for aggression or aggressive behavior is fear. So that's what's fueling it. Now, that's a good chunk of the dogs. Not all aggression is fear-based. I want to clarify, make sure that that's clarified. But for a lot of small dogs, of course, fear is going to be, you know, it's obvious in a lot of cases because they experience, again, the world in such scary ways with, you know, so many big things happening around them all the time. So, you know, I think that all of these euphemisms to that are thrown at the small dogs is our culture around how we view dogs. And of course, social media doesn't help, as you guys know.
Yeah, we do.
You know, people sharing, you know, ridiculous videos of small dogs being laughed at or again, being called these things or the labels thrown up on the screen and being shared. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people find that as entertainment and they share it. And so it gets a lot of traction. So the language of it or the labels of these small dogs, you know, again, just showing their behavior because they're scared or frightened or, you know, having a tough time, they're labeled as like this awful character, like in a movie or something or in a story. And that's really sad because, again, it doesn't take into account their feelings and their needs. Yeah. And they're very expressive sometimes too. You know? Like Chihuahuas for me are very good about wearing their emotions on their sleeves, sort of like German Shepherds. So if you compare and contrast to some of the other dogs, like livestock guardian dogs or Rottweiler, for instance, that's often much more stoic in their expressions, which is not always a good thing, by the way. I actually love when dogs are expressive because it keeps us as trainers and people out of trouble most of the time. You know, when a dog is snarling and snapping and growling, most people know to keep their distance, right? So that's why I love actually Chihuahuas for that, is that, yes, they can be expressive, and unfortunately people take that and twist it into entertainment. But it's also, for me, a good thing because now the dog's giving plenty of signals, you know, even before all of that overt behavior. I think Chihuahuas are very, very easy to read in the regard of, if we want to keep ourselves out of trouble and we want to keep our dog safe, then Chihuahuas are like one of the best you can own.
Yeah,
recognize that most of the time. Now, of course, I'm talking a lot about breeds too. I also want to recognize that each dog's an individual. So breed does matter, but it doesn't mean every dog in a particular breed is going to do a certain set of things. It's just something we should be aware of. But you can have dogs like German Shepherds, for instance. There's so many of them, and there's so many different lines of German Shepherds that you could get, you know, you could pretty much run the entire spectrum of all the different types of behaviors you'd see in dogs and find it in some German Shepherd somewhere. However, I do recognize that German Shepherds were selected for by humans for certain behavioral traits or characteristics. So, yeah. So just want to clarify that just so we know that, yes, dogs are individuals, but they also, we have to consider that they're dogs and they're also certain breeds.
Yeah. Like we're all individuals, not all the same, are we? So good point.
So we see a lot of aggression towards visitors with Chihuahuas. It's something that we get asked about a lot. When new people come into the home, my Chihuahua, it tries to attack my guests. Would you say that that was also down to fear? Because some people seem to have the notion that, oh, they're trying to protect me. I think it's probably more a case. What do you think?
Well, that's a great question, because I think it's important for people to understand why their dog might be trying to go after Uncle Bob that comes to the home, right? And most of the time it is fear-based. So the dog is just scared of whoever's coming to the home, especially if it's a stranger. But that's not the only reason. Sometimes the dog, there's something called territorial behavior in animals where they're protecting. They value that home-based location, just like we do as people, right? Somebody strange comes through our door that we don't know, of course we're going to respond in different levels. Some of us might just say, hey, who are you? And all the way and up to doing violent things to that person. And dogs are no different, right? There's different levels of how they respond. So protecting one's own property is another reason for aggressive responses that can happen. Protecting other resources in the home is another common one. So it could be the food, the toys, the bones, the resting spots, and it can be the people. So now this is where I want to make sure I distinguish the difference between resource guarding of people and true protection of people. So resource guarding is just where a dog is, I want that thing to myself. I need to keep it because it's valuable to me, or I need it for survival. And again, that's very normal behavior for all species. It's not a bad thing. It's just a normal thing. And of course, as humans, we find it undesirable because we don't want to be bitten. But, you know, we, again, don't blame each other. If somebody tries to steal our car or tries to take the wallet out of our pocket or something like that, we're going to respond. We're going to guard that thing because it's a resource to us. So dogs, chihuahuas might do that when there's something in the home, and they might guard their person as a resource. So don't take my person away from me because I find them of value. So that's nice. You know, the dog loves the person. They find that person valuable. So yes, you might see aggressive behavior directed at Uncle Bob because the dog thinks that person, Uncle Bob's going to try to take the person away, or even if it's just like a hug or like, hey, come over here, kind of, that can be perceived as the person taking away that resource. So that's resource guarding. True protective behavior is when a dog feels the person is a threat to their owner. So Uncle Bob is going to do something bad to my owner. It's going to, you know, cause physical harm or threaten them or make them feel unsafe. That's true protective behavior. That is very rare, and it's actually difficult to get. So, and it's usually breed specific. So we might say, like, let's take a Belgian Malinois from working lines. We can reasonably say that that dog, when we're seeing behavior of aggression near a human that they are, you know, that owns them or is their guardian, we can often start to lean towards protective behavior versus a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, for instance. It's highly unlikely for that dog to really think that that person is perceived that, because we haven't bred for that. We haven't selected for that as humans in Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. So it's rare to actually see a dog saying, oh, that person's a threat to my guardian. It can seem romantic and nice that our dog's trying to protect us, but oftentimes they're just protecting themselves. They're fearful about the person. They're protecting their property. They're protecting the person as a resource. And that's not a bad thing either. You know, the dog still is bonded and likes the person. They're just not worried about the threat to that person. So that's the difference between resource guarding and protective behavior. So when you see that, especially in a Chihuahua, it's more for me on the resource guarding or fear issue side of things. So those are, we kind of touched upon the most common ones. I probably should mention some of the other ones too that are really important to consider. And one of them is pain or underlying medical issues. The reason I mention this is because it is so often missed in dogs. And if you look at some behavior practices, there was actually a recent paper that from Daniel Mills' practice, there was an estimate of around 80%, slightly more than 80% of the behavior and aggression cases they were seeing are pain or underlying medical component related. So you think about that. When people have, you know, a dog showing aggression, sometimes they're leaning towards all those other things. Oh, my demon dog, or you know, my dog's just protecting me. And the dog might be in pain or have underlying medical issues going on. And if nobody notices that or recognizes that, that poor dog, think about it. They're not having that addressed. They're screaming out loud that, hey, I don't want you to touch me because that could hurt, or that's just uncomfortable for me, or my owner is my source of comfort. You know, I'm happy curled up on their lap, relaxing and not being bothered. And so somebody's going to try to touch me while I'm in pain. So when in doubt, always go to the vet just to rule those things out, and preferably a vet that has a background in behavior or knows how to diagnose for pain or underlying medical issues related to behavior. I always make a point of mentioning pain because it's just sadly so underdiagnosed with dogs. So especially in aggression.
Absolutely.
When it's fear aggression versus resource guarding, are there any distinctive behaviors that you would look out for that would tell you the difference between the two?
Great question. So body language is the first thing you always look at. It's going to tell you, or like a history of the body language, what it looks like. So resource guarding, you're going to see the dog obviously near something of value, but you're going to see the body language freezing. So the dog is more stiff for moments, kind of hovering over that particular object. They'll have their head lowered a little bit. Usually you see what's called an agonistic pucker, which is when think of their lips forming like a C shape. So everything's kind of curling forward, moving forward, makes like a nice C shape. That's called an agonistic pucker, and you can see their teeth. Usually there's a growl. They might bark, but it's often freezing, growling, hovering over the resource, stiff legs, lowered head. ears forward usually. Sometimes the tail's up and high. It doesn't always have to be, but that can be classic sign. So that's the body language of resource guarded case. Fear is, think of the opposite direction. So the ears are pulled back, the lips are retracted and long. You still might see teeth, but it's the lips. Think of the lip shape going really long versus really short. You can see stiffness, but it's often the dog will start leaning away or shifting away or moving away from whatever it is that's scaring them. And if that doesn't work, they're going to move back forward. So it can be a little deceiving sometimes because you're like, wait a minute, they want to get away, but they're moving towards the thing. And that forward approach is just usually coupled with some sort of aggressive response to make that thing go further away. So body language will tell you a lot. Tail tucked, ears pulled back, all of those things you'll see so it's almost the opposite of like thinking everything moving forward on the dog versus everything being pulled back on the dog with fear. Then you look at the behavior history. So that's the second thing that'll really help you figure out what's going on is, of course, the dog, you'll hear about the dog protecting things, you know, or you go near their food bowl or their toy or their resting spot or their person. And that's when the aggressive behavior happens versus when it's not near it. So you can the same person can easily approach the dog or pet the dog when they're not near something of value. And then fear-based behavior will of course not happen near a resource, you know, the dog's going to do it pretty consistently towards that person, regardless of the context. Could happen outside the home, could happen inside the home, dog's moving away, dog's barking and lunging and then moving away again. And it's not near any particular person, or you can switch people to really see, like, all right, let me see if it's this other person. Somebody else holds the leash. What does the dog do? And if it's the same response, then you can start leaning towards fear. So, you can often, and just one other quick note too, sometimes both could be happening. So then it becomes a little tricky. You could have a dog that guards things and is fearful of people or other dogs, or whatever it is. So you might see conflicted body language too. Sometimes you see a little bit of the forward posturing I was talking about, and then the dog's pulling back. So it can get a little confusing sometimes. And that's where a good behavior professional will help with unpacking what's really occurring. But conflicted behaviors, multiple reasons. You could have dogs that are resource guarding, fearful, guarding the territory, have pain issues. There's a number of reasons that could be occurring at the same time in some cases, but don't fret, you know, don't worry. We can address all those. And the beauty of using positive reinforcement training with these dogs is that you often can tackle multiple issues, even when you don't realize it, all at the same time. So, you know, you could teach a dog that's fearful of people that when somebody approaches, good things happen, even if the dog's guarding the ball and is fearful of that person, and you get the same effects.
Yeah. So you could actually have a Chihuahua that is guarding their person. It's on their lap and the visitor comes in and they're actually frightened of that visitor and guarding their person at the same time, which I think we probably do see quite a lot, don't we? Yeah. And probably pain as well, but just those two things. And I guess we could probably help that dog by using the same kind of protocol possibly.
Absolutely. And you know, that's the interesting thing is that one other thing I want to mention is that small dogs, you know, because of they find like their person is like the home base, like they sometimes will be sitting on their lap or they'll be picked up. And so that person's is kind of a safe zone in a way. They know that person's going to protect them from whatever bad thing is going to happen, or they're going to be picked up and moved out of a particular location. And that person can end up being guarded because it's just like a dog might guard that has pain issues that's guarding their dog bed, their nice, comfy, Tempur-Pedic dog bed that the owner spent a lot of money on. That's where the dog is feeling very comfortable. So they might actually guard that because that's a valuable resource, right? It becomes their safe space. So people can be safe spaces like that as well because something scary happens, they get picked up or they get moved away for small dogs mostly, right? And I should address that question, which I get a lot, is it okay to pick up my small dog, or should I do that, or should I comfort my dog? And the answer is absolutely yes. Always, always advocate for your dog. Always, you know, care for them. It's just replace Chihuahua, like small child. Imagine and big scary guys walking down the street towards you.
I love that.
You're just going to leave your child on the ground, you know, kick them in the butt, push them towards the person, just deal with it kind of thing. No, of course not. So same thing with small dogs. Always advocate for them. Now, could you reinforce undesirable behavior? Sure. But I'd much rather say, okay, don't worry, I've got you. I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to pick you up anyways, make you feel safe. And you might be barking and lunging at that person at the time. And if I pick you up, you might figure out that I get picked up if I bark and lunge at this person. That's okay, because as long as you recognize that, we can make adjustments to help the dog feel safer so they don't need to bark and lunge. But I'm still going to ensure I'm advocating for them at all times. But when we do start training, I'm going to set it up where the dog doesn't feel the need they have to be picked up. We're going to keep it at a level when we first start out that they're going to feel safe and comfortable while we're working through this, so they never feel the need they need to be picked up. And so we don't inadvertently reinforce sort of that undesirable response in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And this is what we talk a lot on the podcast about, is advocating for your dog, you know, especially and also picking up as well. So we're all for that. Yeah. This is a question we get a lot, actually. Kate, is your question next?
I did.
Because we covered the pain one.
And we've also covered quite a bit of my next question, which was about Chihuahuas tend to be very much a one person dog. And we both see a lot of them resource guarding one person in the home. It's very common. What are things that we can do to help the dog not feel the need to want to resource guard their person?
Yeah, this is an interesting question, because I don't think I've ever thought of it this way with small dogs. But, you know, when we have one of the things I recommend when somebody gets a new puppy, or they want to avoid, you know, potentially resource guarding issues, or maybe they got a breed that is more prone to resource guarding, or maybe they've experienced resource guarding issues with their past dogs, so they want to avoid it now with their new dog. And so we want to kind of do preventative maintenance, or, you know, prevent that as best we can, especially with small dogs. So we can do a lot of different things to make sure that the dog feels safe about people approaching, but that they aren't going to take away that person, so that resource again. So if it's the Chihuahua that's resource guarding their person, then and we get a new one that's not, but we want to prevent it, it's to think about what would make that dog feel better about people approaching. So I always ask my clients, you know, think about what do you think would be good if for your dog if people start approaching, so they don't feel threatened, so they don't feel like they're going to lose you. And it's just like what we would do with a food ball or a toy or a bone, is that we teach them when people approach, it's a good thing for you. So usually I use food for most dogs, of course, if we're using the positive reinforcement. We can use other things, but let's use the example of food where we're approaching. That person that's approaching, let's say the Chihuahua is on the lap of the person and they're sitting on the couch, you can just have people walk by, and as they're walking by or approaching, they toss a treat towards the dog, and then the dog eats it. They have to have pretty decent aim if the dog's on their lap. Then they just move away right after the treat happens. And you rinse and repeat that. And it doesn't have to be hundreds of times. It can be just randomly happens every once in a while, that person just walking by. If it's somebody in the home, especially that lives there, it makes it a lot easier. But you can have when strangers are over or friends are over, you can have the same thing. They're just approaching, walking by, tossing a treat. And by the way, I'm talking about dogs that don't have a history of resource guarding. Of course, if a dog does have a history of biting or resource guarding, we have other safety measures we would put in place. But let's say it's a young puppy or a dog that we want to make sure they don't have issues. Just start with that first step. And that can go such a long way, because what you'll start to see is that Chihuahua, instead of getting hovering or freezing or starting to give the look to that person, it'll turn into the opposite. Actually, you'll start to see the tail wagging, the mouth open up and relax, and the ears kind of like perk up like, oh, there's a person approaching again. That's a good thing for me. And you'll start to see what's called a different conditioned emotional response. The dog's actually happy about people approaching. That's what you're looking for. Now, one other step you can do as well is just a recall away from the person. So the dog also knows that sometimes you might get pulled away from that person, but you can come right back. So I teach the other person just to call the dog away, be like, okay, you know, let's use the classic Fido, Fido, come. And then the dog comes, and then you reinforce them with a treat, and then you let them go right back to that person's lap. So we don't want to always just be like, Fido, come, and then haha, now I'm got next to that person. Mm-hmm. It should be like sometimes the dog's just allowed to go right back, so they don't always think it's going to result in them losing that person. But what that does now is it's like we teach a dog when we want them to give up a toy or something, or exchange for a toy. That's all we're doing there, is we're just exchanging for the person for a treat, but they can go right back to that person. just like they could go right back to their toy or their food bowl or whatever it is that could be a resource. And then what you can do is once the dog's away, that person can go sit on the couch next to the person or give that person a hug or whatever the next step in that interaction was. But again, it teaches the dog that, hey, good things happen when I leave my person. And it's just a great preventative step, and it works so, so well. And it's so easy to do too. It's just so easy. And you don't have to do it hundreds of times. I've seen dogs where you see that conditional muscle response happen after 5 repetitions. The dog's like, wait, I love this game. I love when people approach. So let's get some more people over. Let's have a party. Let's get some more people over.
I love that idea for puppies. I really love that idea for puppies. It's so important, isn't it?
Too, right? That's where you're tackling a lot of the other issues. So if you have a dog that you're worried about becoming fearful of strangers or territorial about people coming over, you can see how you're tackling 3 things at the same time there: territorial behavior, fear behavior, resource guarding. You're mitigating all of those because all people are predicting good things for the dog.
That's amazing.
I wish everybody would do that, but
that doesn't happen. We wouldn't get so many calls. And you know, this is something we could probably set up for our dogs, isn't it? We could set these little kind of visitor parties, as it were, up, you know, in like sort of practice runs.
Yeah. And you can even make it even easier for your visitors, like have a jar of treats. And that's the nice thing about small dogs is that you don't have to set up too high. Just have a jar of treats somewhere that's easily accessible for anybody walking in the room. So like on a shelf somewhere or a table that as they're entering the room, they can just grab it. So you're not like always having to set it up or be like, wait a second, let me go to the kitchen and get my treats.
Yeah.
It becomes a little more artificial that way. So if there's just more naturally, then that really, the dog, you'll see a huge change. Dogs like, I love
it. Yeah, absolutely.
Then the dog will start eyeing, like training the guests, be like, there's the thing over there, there's the ball of treats over there. Is that where you're going to go?
Go get me one.
Kind of start looking back and forth.
Yeah, something they can do with actual real visitors, but make sure you have the treats and the jar of treats ready for that.
Yes.
Absolutely. I love that idea. This is the question that I want, and this is something I feel really passionate about: social media, specifically TikTok and small dogs, you know, chihuahuas. Do you think that there has been an increase in dog bites or dog aggression due to the trends that we see on TikTok? Like Kate said, you know, do this to your dog and see what they do. Stick your finger in its ear and things like that. Because I do see a lot of small dogs being, let's just say, abused on social media. And I think it's getting worse.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, because I just recently recorded a podcast episode with Janice Bradley, who is a very well known in terms of when it comes to dog bite statistics, the data and the research behind that. She's been looking at the data, at least in the United States, for more than 2 decades. So really has a deep understanding of where to get good statistics from. And in the States, we have the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, which tracks dog bites. So to answer your question, the jury's still out on the last couple of years, the last few years during the pandemic when everybody was on social media and TikTok came around. And so we shall see. However, I do think that we're going to see an uptick in statistics, you know, because I would say it's also going to be skewed though with smaller dogs, because smaller dogs aren't inflicting this. So let's say we have a dog that's biting at the same level. And anybody who's familiar with the different bite levels, we have dogs that bite, let's say, a level 3, which is a bite that causes a small puncture wound to somebody. Now, if you have a Great Dane biting somebody versus a Chihuahua, of course, at the same level, so the same amount of pressure, you're not going to have the same amount of damage. So the somebody seeking medical care might not be as common, which most of the reported data is through people going to the emergency room. So it's the data, the CDC is pulling statistics from those emergency rooms, those healthcare facilities that treat dog bites. So, but they, of course, they're not even touching breed or what kind of dog did this to you. Mm-hmm. But it does, I think that a lot less people are going to seek medical care for smaller dog bites. And kind of a quick side note on that too, is that it doesn't always necessarily have to do with the size of the dog. It has to do a lot also with the jaw structure. And so you might have like a Great Dane, or sort of like dogs that have more of a greyhound shaped snout. So the longer the snout, the more they technically could do damage. It's more like an alligator in a sense, right? If you think about like this, how much teeth can get on you versus a brachycephalic breed, like a English bulldog, they aren't equipped as well to put as much teeth on you in an efficient way anyways. So Chihuahuas actually are pretty well equipped in most cases. They have to look in, and actually there's a great book, Dog Bites, also from Daniel Mills and his team, a number of other great authors. They were looking at the forensics of dog bites in the jaw structure, and Chihuahuas actually can be more damaging than some of the larger breeds, so because of the way their teeth are set in their jaw. So just a little interesting side note there.
Wow, that is interesting.
Dog bites and statistics, but
yeah.
So to get back to the social media question, yeah, definitely. And I talk to, this is a great question for us because I talk to other folks that are in our industry that work with other, you know, particular niches. So like with Jen Triock with Family Paws. So her focus is on dog bites to children or, you know, behavior, you know, generally dogs and children interactions and relationships, but she also looks at dog bites. And so she's also concerned about an uptick in dog to child bite cases because, again, of stuff people see on social media, people doing really not good things on social media. So I do think we're going to see that as we go along because people do imitate each other and these trends and these challenges come along. And the poor small dogs often are getting the most of the brunt of it, right? They're getting the most, you know, people are getting away with it more because these dogs aren't doing as much damage to them, or maybe they're not, people aren't recognizing the potential risks. But the problem is when somebody that really has a dog that has issues that might bite, and or you have a child watching these things, right? So you have somebody's, you know, us adults are all doing this and we're just all laughing about it. But then somebody's, you know, 12-year-old out in Wisconsin or something's on TikTok watching this. Oh, that looks funny. And I'm going to do that with my dog or even a younger child. Think about the damage that can occur there and what can happen and the trauma that can happen to these young children. And, you know, dogs are going to bite them in the face more often than adults. And so lots of ramifications for these things. And I do think, you know, it's an issue. It's a big issue. It's the social media with people doing things to all dogs, but especially small dogs. I mean, especially the Chihuahuas. I think they're the number one breed, unfortunately.
I know. It's horrible to watch. I've actually seen some of these trends go a little bit wrong. So they'll do a trend. I think there was a guy with a, put a towel on your dog and then do something with the towel. So he put the towel on the small dog. It was a tiny dog. And this dog went crazy and attacked him. So it wasn't supposed to happen like that, but you know, the trends do go wrong sometimes. So like you say, you know, if a child tries it and they're going to try that, it could be disastrous.
Extremely. Yeah. Yeah. That's, oh yeah. I was just thinking about some of the trends too, as you're talking about this and it's just, all of us trainers always shudder and, you know, we do our best to educate the public about it, but unfortunately, as you guys know, the viral stuff reaches so many more people. We need the viral stuff to be about, you know, what the nice things we can do.
We're trying, aren't we? We're trying.
Yeah, we'll keep trying. What I find it heartbreaking because they're not paying attention to how the dog feels, are they? They're just oblivious to the emotions that the dog is experiencing when it is acting aggressively, or just people need to be aware, don't they?
It's like the likes. So just the main thing, like the most important thing, the likes. It's nothing to do with how the dog's actually feeling about the situation. It's just no, it's like they have no emotion. It's just, anyway.
Just entertainment.
That's what I was going to go with. I was going to ask you guys, actually, what do you see in terms of Chihuahuas being more like fashion accessories to some people? So they don't even need, I see it where they don't even, you know, they talk like they value their dog as a sentient being, as an animal, but they also, you also see like almost like a fashion accessory, like something that somebody gets as a status symbol, or like, this is my new pocketbook, or this is my new sports car, or this is, you know, my new Chihuahua. And then they use it like in a way that's not respecting it, that it's an animal, right? What do you guys see there? Do you guys kind of see what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah.
We both see it. And I just find it, we both find it just amazing that these people, they clearly love their dogs, but they just don't understand them. They don't understand them as a dog. They don't appreciate them as a dog. And they just aren't meeting their needs. And then they have all these issues. And it all comes down to the fact that they're not recognizing them as a dog.
And the big thing for me is that the complete lack of body language education, well, body language, they're not reading their dog at all, or they're reading something else, you know. And there's the thing is, there's so many resources out there. Just it's all over YouTube. There's stuff out there to educate yourself. They just it's just not getting to the people that need it.
Yeah, and that's the problem. When people have that accessory, it's like a phone, right?
they
get it. It's like the new flashy thing, and they want to show it off to everybody.
Not reading the manual.
That's exactly it. You know, most people aren't going to know about how to go into their settings and to change all these subtle options. The same thing with, you know, I see like with, they're just not interested in the dog body language because they don't care about it until it's a problem. So unless something breaks on their phone, they're not diving into those settings, right? And it's that's that fashion.
Just flicking through, going, yeah, fine, right, lovely new collar. That's more important, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Like your new phone case, right? It's sweater or that new collar, which is fine. You know, I don't have any problem with people wanting to, you know, be proud of their dog, but let's recognize their, you know, their emotions first, their needs. Mm-hmm. And then accessorize them if they need to.
Yeah, I agree. So my next question was, why should people not punish their dogs for growling? Because I feel like people are like, oh, they're just being a bad dog. They need to be told off if they're going to growl at me. Why is it a bad idea that people don't do that?
And can I just cut in there, Kate, as well? On social media, you see a lot of this. You see a lot of people getting in the dog's face and all of that.
Yeah.
Or telling the dog off.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a person that works with aggression cases and help people with aggression all over the world. And the number one thing I love about dogs is the ones who growl, because they're letting you know exactly how they feel. The problem happens when dogs stop growling, because then they go often from nothing or very subtle signals. They're like, I'm going to skip the growl, because that doesn't work for me. Nobody's listening to me. So I'm going to have to go to biting. And most people don't stick around if a dog's got their teeth sunk into their skin. So that works. And that's what happens, is then the dog's like, oh, that worked really well that time. That time, last time I was scared or somebody was touching my resource, all I had to do was put my teeth on them. And that always works for me. So I'm going to just go to that all the time. So then they're going to skip over the growl. And that gets people in trouble. And but that for the obvious worst outcome is it gets the dog in trouble. And so the dog, you know, again, what happens when a dog bites in a lot of places is that serious ramifications can occur, especially the potential life of that dog. So it's really, really important that we preserve that growl, because it's information to us. An analogy I use for a lot of my clients to understand this is just like, if you're a person, right, and your growl is, hey, don't touch that, or you say something to somebody. So if you're out, you know, you're visiting a new place, let's say you finally go out for a vacation, you get a nice trip, you're getting away from all this pandemic stuff, being stuck in the house, you're so excited about your vacation, you're out there with your cell phone, you're just walking down the street, and you're trying to get your map to take you to the new location, and somebody comes over and puts their hand on your cell phone as you're walking down, or tries to grab it out of your hand, you know, and you say, hey, and then their next step is to try to punish you for that, right? You're warning to them, and they slap your hand or they slap your face or something like that. What's your response going to be next? You're probably going to escalate, right? Right. So most, you know, in people, just like dogs, are going to be different. Some of us will, you know, stop at that and be like, okay, or they might go to punch this person, or where guns might be legal in some places, they might pull out their gun and they go to the next step. And now what's going to happen if you go back to that same location and somebody else does the same thing to your phone? Guess what's going to happen if you're slapping that person's hand away didn't work and you know how to do more lethal options, right? What are you going to reach for the next time you're in that area and some shady character comes up you in the same way? You're going to like, forget this slapping the hand away thing or telling them, no, knock it off, because that doesn't work for me. So I'm going to go right to what does work, because it worked last time for me. And it's why punishment is just such a terrible option in these cases, because it doesn't, in most cases, it can just make things so much worse. It's so much so quickly too in dogs, just like people, because that's the thing with aggression. It's not where it's, you know, you're just grabbing a sandwich off somebody's counter. That's reinforcing, you know, like for a dog, they're like, oh, okay, that was cool. But when it comes to something that's scaring a person or a dog, or they feel threatened by whatever outcome that works for them, they're really gonna remember it. I mean, it's more so much more reinforcing than many other things in our lives, you know, that we do that keep our behavior going in a certain way. With aggression, all it takes sometimes just once. because we're gonna remember that. That worked to keep me safe. That kept me alive that last time, or kept me from losing something of real value to me. And so I'm just gonna keep going with that. That's my game plan. That's my go-to behavior. And that's what can happen to dogs if we punish that growl. So
yeah, actually, just quickly, this one here, I mean, I know it's a painting, but my little Chihuahua mix, Bo, she came to me with lots of aggression issues, and she used to guard things, and she used to basically launch herself from the ground up to your sort of stomach height to attack you, to get you to move away. So I actually had to teach her to growl. I would reinforce any little sort of growl that I could hear, any sort of little purr or growl, and we got to the stage where now she can actually do a proper growl. I think because she was punished for growling in her previous home, I was like probably like her third or fourth home, and I think all the time that she was probably punished for the growling, and so that's her warning system. And she had no warning system when she came to me. She used to go straight to the bite, and it was quite nasty. So I had to literally teach her to growl, and I love it when she growls now because I can move back.
Yes. I love that. Yeah. And it's because it's hard to get that back when a dog's been punished for it. They often just keep resorting to the.
It's taken years. Yeah. It's taken years, really. But, you know, as a trainer, you kind of know what you're wanting from the growl. But yeah, it's important, isn't it? So what can caregivers do if they have a Chihuahua that is right now displaying aggression in the home? Regardless of really what it is, what are the first steps that they can take?
I'm sure you know the first part of this answer, which is contact a training professional that uses positive reinforcement-based methods to help you with that issue, because it's important to understand why. And I find that's where a good trainer or consultant can come in and really help really unravel what's going on, to understand the dog. Once you have that and you have some way to move forward in terms of training, even if it's just that one session, that can really be a big game changer. Now, of course, I would recommend continuing to work with somebody to resolve the issue, but sometimes even just one, just understanding why that is, and that can be difficult for somebody just to try to figure out online, because it's just like a doctor, like diagnosing something. It's not, you know, you don't want to just go to Dr. Google if you're having some pain issues somewhere. It's best to seek the advice of a professional. And that way, that's going to give you the context in which it happens. Then when you know the context, or what's called the triggers or the antecedents, what causes the dog to display that aggression, then you can start to manage it. So in the meantime, while we figure out a game plan on how to help that dog feel safer or better about that particular trigger, we're going to manage it so the dog doesn't constantly get exposed to that trigger. So like if it was where I took you guys on vacation to somewhere where that person tried to steal your cell phone and you guys are like really nervous about it, I'm like, all right, we don't have to go to that same place again. Let's go to somewhere else for our walk or our vacation. Or, you know, if we are going to go down there, I'm going to make sure we're going at a certain time of day or where you're going to feel safe. So that's the same thing we want to do for our dogs. We're going to advocate for them and figure out that context it happens. Because that's the saying I use all the time, is aggression is contextual. It's going to always happen in a certain context. It's never out of the blue. 99.999% of the time, it's not out of the blue. The only time it's really out of the blue is when a dog has an underlying like medical condition, seizure related disorder. Most of the time, it's going to be something in the environment you can see is happening that triggers the dog. The person walking towards them, the person's hand reaching towards them, the person just standing there being in the environment, and then the dog feeling nervous about that person or worried about that person touching them and causing pain, or worried about what that person might do because they're fearful of them. Then that's going to really help you understand, how can I help this dog? So I'm going to first make sure they're not exposed to that. And if I do expose them to it in the name of helping them feel better, I'm going to set it up so that way we're just gradually exposing them to that. So I'll walk you guys down that street in that place, but we're not going to go all the way down, and we're going to wait till it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon when there's some police officers staying on that street as well. Super safe, but we're just going to be at a distance and we're just going to gradually go down there. And we're going to go back to that store we really wanted to go to that has all the goodies that you wanted to buy, and then gradually introduce you to that environment again, all the time making sure you feel safe and pairing good things with that environment or that context. And so that's how I work with most of my aggression cases. First, discover what it is, then manage it, and then address it and make sure the dog feels safer around it. So regardless of the aggression issue, most aggression cases are the same like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So like a three-step plan, but obviously contact a professional as your kind of go-to.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like people need to understand that there's always a function behind any behavior, isn't it? Not just aggression, any behavior. The dog is performing that behavior for a reason, and it's not just doing it because it's naughty. Because I hear that a lot. If a dog's snapping or biting at the owner, they'll be like, oh, he's just being naughty, or he's trying to be the boss. Get that a lot. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. And that behavior is always serving a function.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the function of aggression, again, is to increase distance or make that threatening thing go away. But there's also, you know, the motivation for that, right? So that aggressive behavior, that growling, that snarling, that snapping, that biting, there's always a motivation. And, you know, with aggressive responses, you look at the emotions. You know, we talked about fear, but there's also frustration that can come into play, stress, which is not an emotion, but it's a sort of a byproduct of certain negative emotions, can come into play. Pain, I mentioned. So when we understand the motivation, then we understand the function, which is, I want that thing to go away because it's bothering me, or it's scary, or it's threatening. So, but it's always driven by some underlying emotion. And it's usually what we call a negative balanced emotion. So, you know, negative emotions like fear, anger, frustration, and then you have positive balance, happiness. And, you know, those are things that we're not necessarily worried about changing. We want the dog to be happy, of course, at least most of us do. So that's called the positive balance emotion. We have to address the negative balance emotions, because if we don't, you don't actually change the behavior. You can suppress it. You can say, you know, you can stop a dog or animal or any animal from doing something through physical methods, but that doesn't help the dog feel better about it. That doesn't address the true reason for it, the true fuel behind the fire. And we really have to focus on that first if we really want to help the dogs. So yeah, always look at what's that dog feeling, you know, in the body language, and again, the behavior history will give you that information. But that's first and foremost, we got to know what's motivating that behavior.
Love it. I feel like that's exactly what our listeners need to hear.
We're all about how the dog's feeling and empathizing with them, with our dogs. So yeah, absolutely.
Last question, is there anything that people should avoid doing, which you kind of covered already? What should people avoid doing if they have a dog with aggression?
With aggression issues already.
Ready.
Yeah, because I would love to talk about things that we should do with dogs in general, but I think you guys probably covered that really well as on your social media and your podcast as well. But yeah, with aggression issues, I think the number one thing is just making sure the word safety comes to mind, meaning not only safety for whatever the dog's going after or having issues with. So obviously we use things like leashes or maybe baby gates in somebody's home, or a muzzle for a dog that has a bite history. Those are what we typically think of as safety. But more importantly, is that dog feeling safe? So we don't have to use those safety tools in the future, right? We want to make sure that dog is feeling safe. So the number one thing for me is making sure my clients understand I'm going to keep my dog feeling safe by not exposing them to those triggers in a way that they're going to feel the need to respond. We can work around those triggers. You know, if it's Uncle Bob coming in the home, we can have Uncle Bob come over, but we're going to do it in a way that there's enough distance. What Uncle Bob is doing is not that scary. And we're also not keeping Uncle Bob in the home for so long that you feel like it's too overwhelming. So those are the three sort of technical words: distance, the duration, and the intensity of whatever stimulus it is. So we need maybe Uncle Bob to show up on outside the home, and we're working outside the home instead of inside the home at 50 meters away or 20 meters away instead of 2 meters away. And we're going to have Uncle Bob come over for 10 minutes instead of 10 hours all afternoon. So that's all, if you pay attention to those things, that number one is going to help your dog feel better. But then what'll happen is, if we're doing the right things in the training and behavior change strategies, is that we gradually get Uncle Bob more often, and then decrease the distance. So you go from 20 meters to 18 meters, and then we increase the duration from 10 minutes to 15 minutes. And then we increase what Uncle Bob does. He starts waving his hands and maybe talking more. And every single time we're doing that, we're making good things happen for the dog. So the owner can be pairing Uncle Bob's things that he does with food or treats or other things the dog likes, play, toys. There's many other things we can use for reinforcers. But what we do is just teach that dog that good things happen when Uncle Bob comes over. But going back to that safety, every single time we do it, you're going to feel safe. And guess what happens? Dogs can be like, this isn't so bad after all. And we're going to be able to get along here and actually kind of like it when Uncle Bob comes over because maybe he should come over more often. And then next thing you know, Uncle Bob's able to get within that 2 meters or maybe even pet the dog or all those things that previously couldn't happen because the dog wasn't feeling safe. Once they feel safe, then you'll see a huge difference, you know. And the dog always tells you if they're feeling safe. And that's why body language is so important to understand.
I think that's a really nice thing to end, is that we should be keeping our chihuahuas feeling, so to prevent aggression, we should be keeping our chihuahuas feeling safe. Mm-hmm. That's key, isn't it? I guess in terms of fear, which is a lot of them do have fear issues, and that's why they're that's why they show aggression. But yeah, absolutely.
If our listeners want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
The easiest place is aggressivedog.com. So with no S at the end. So aggressivedog.com. And I have all of my links there. So the link to the podcast, The Bitey End of the Dog, and the conference links, courses, webinars, articles now from guest authors. So it's a central hub for all the things. Everything like that. So.
You got the best website as well, aggressivedog.com.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. And you know, it's a label too, when you think about it. Aggressive is a label, but I find that when people are searching for help, they're going to look for those terms. So that's why I kind of went with that domain name. But then I explained later on that, you know, aggressive is not a bad thing. It's just what the dog is doing. It's behavior.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, it's been amazing. We've actually loved having you on, Michael. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, I appreciate you both. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's great, great chatting with you both.
So that was Michael Shikashio, one of our industry experts, the world leading aggression expert, talking to us about small dog aggression, specifically chihuahuas. And we really thoroughly enjoyed that chat. It was amazing. It was a pleasure to have him on. And we hope you enjoyed and got a lot of value out of that episode.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to like, follow, subscribe, tell your friends, leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we will catch you next time.
Catch you next time. Bye.